Welcome to Between the Lines, an Oaks Church Brooklyn podcast where we go behind the scenes of our current series, The Story of God, alongside our pastors and a few friends. We hope you enjoy.
We are back with Between the Lines.
Back in the lab, yeah.
We've had a week off. You had some travel to do.
Yeah, but you know what? We're back and we're here and we're about to go back to our weekly schedule programming.
Yes, so I'm excited. So for those of you who've been patiently waiting for the last Between the Lines, we're sorry, but we're back in the lab and we're putting out production on time. So we're going to be very excited each Thursday. You'll be able to catch your Between the Lines episode where we just unpack our Story of God series.
Yeah.
From now until June.
Yeah, June.
June 1st, we're going to be done
with the Old Testament,
with essentially the Old Testament. We'll be at that break in the story.
That seems wild.
Yeah, we've moved through with you know, I think a good
at a pace. Yeah.
All right, well, one thing I do want to hit before we dive into everything we want to talk about today is the reality that in those days, if people are kind of like, man, I like Between the Lines, those guys are really funny and very smart, but I just want more.
Yeah, I want to listen like in person.
Yes, yeah. Where I can ask the questions in the moment. We've got a space for that.
It's called Sunday School. It's not for children, I promise. It's for
children
of heart. Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. But no, it's a space on Sundays at 1 p.m. So you can go grab your coffee, grab your lunch, come back. And Arya, who's one of our deacons of discipleship, he hosts a space where we continue to unpack the story, the text we had just read, and kind of in a way you can't fully do in the 30-minute sermon. And he creates space for questions, and there's time to read the scriptures together. So, number one, if you want to study the Bible more deeply, you should go to Sunday school. Number
two, sure.
If you just want to make some friends, you should go to Sunday school, because it'll be a space for both of that.
Absolutely. What's the tuition?
$0.
Exactly.
If it's free, it's for me.
Free 99. You can't add, what more could you ask for?
Exactly.
What's free in New York these days?
Sunday school.
Okay, so great. Come to Sunday school. We'd love it. All right, now let's jump into it. So I feel like a good place to leave off is kind of to recap Judges and
where we've been.
So we spend about 4 weeks unpacking this kind of first, this new expression of God's authority towards his people. And I wonder if you kind of just even frame for you, like, why do you think it was important for us to even include, you know, Judges? Because we're doing the story of God. We're not moving canonically. Like, we're not necessarily hitting every book of the Bible. We're not even necessarily moving chronically, where we're just kind of going to every story in order. But we're really trying to tell a narrative out of this narrative. And for you, why do you think it was important for us to stop here and look at this new way of authority that God gives to the Israelite people?
Yeah, I think for one, it sets up this motif of redeemer figures, people that you kind of first get it in Moses, but now that was one particular person at one particular time. Now it seems that God is raising up multiple people who are stepping in to be redeemers of Israel. And that becomes a huge motif throughout the scriptures of who will be the one who is raised up for us, who will redeem us for our enemies. And so I think it just gives us a conceptual category that we need to look out for, that God raises people up.
Yeah, so God's authority is administered, held by God, but administered through human agents.
Yeah. And then this is interesting because during Judges, it's kind of God's prerogative who gets raised up. But as we'll see in this transition we're about to make, is that the people get tired of Judges and they want something a little more concrete, a little more secure.
Don't give the sauce away.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We got to go there. We're going to get there.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got ahead of the game.
Exactly.
You know?
But we're here with Judges. Both men and women are called to lead the people of Israel. We had first week we started with Deborah, then we went to Gideon, Jephthah, which is our last Between the Lines, and then you gave us the story of Samson.
Yeah.
And I know there's a couple of questions that were left over I want us to attend to, but I thought, was there anything for you kind of giving us the story of Samson that you felt like was left on the cutting room floor?
Oh, man, that's such a big question. I think if I could have explored more, I think what got left on the cutting room floor is the real violence of Samson and this interesting question of God. It never seems as if God is sanctioning Samson's actions, and yet God is not above using Samson's actions.
Interesting.
So there's this interesting moment where he wants to marry a Philistine woman, which is in defiance of the Torah, and his parents freak out, obviously, as good Jewish parents would. And then there's this little parenthetical note of, but they didn't know that God wanted to get a hold of the Philistines.
Mm.
And so it's like, there's this interesting question there that God is not saying, Samson, go marry a Philistine. But he's also saying, hey, listen, I'm trying to deal with the Philistines, and somehow I'm going to use this to work it out to redeem my people. And so that's a very interesting question. Can God use human folly or even human evil to accomplish his purposes?
Okay, well, this is a great kind of expansion segue, because some of the leftover questions, and there were kind of three that I would love for us to just have a little conversation on, start off kind of there, what you're talking about. So, you know, the first one was like, if we as followers of Christ, like, choose to take up our cross and still fall into sin, like, how should we come to terms with that? Like, and so, like, because I'm hearing you say, like, you know, Paul says, like, should we sin that grace may abound? Heavens no, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a sense of what you're saying that, like, hey, Samson does this thing that's in some ways not in the desire of God, but is in the design of God.
Yeah. It's funny because Paul also says there's things that I do that I don't want to do, and there's things I don't want to do that I end up doing. You know, like, there's this weird inner clash happening within humanity. And I think what we get out of Samson's story, and then, like, this kind of, we're Christians, we're following Jesus, we're filled with the Holy Spirit, you know, like, but I still stumble and fall into sin. I think there is, like, something to recognize about this reality that we are being saved. And that, so we are, there's a finality of the cross, but that finality is getting worked out in real time in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I see, like, a story like Samson, is that Samson's folly, even his evil at times, is obviously sin, and yet there is a God who's working in and through this thing, not just for his own glory, but also for Samson's own redemption, because we end the story with a redeemed Samson. Now, his redemption is also his death.
Sure, yeah.
Which is, I think it's a whole other thing to talk about. But I think in the Christian life, to be someone who is being saved is someone who recognizes that my folly, my sin, my brokenness, even that thing is being worked out for my salvation. It's not an approval of those things. It's not I'm going to sin more so grace may abound. But it's this, like, for instance, it's this, like, I with a, going on an 8-month old now, like, he continues to do the things I tell him not to do because he doesn't know English.
Yeah.
But also he's a child. He's ignorant of why he's doing these things.
Have you tried Spanish though?
I have tried Spanish, but he's still, I think that one he just puts a deaf ear. But okay, so in this relationship with my son, there is this reality that even as he's doing these things that are not good, he's also, like, learning and being cared for and being redirected.
Yeah.
And there's something, I think, in that of our own experience, of our own folly, our own flaws, our own brokenness, that God is constantly redirecting and realigning and readjusting as we commit ourselves to that process.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that goes back to, you know, our own, like, this conception of sin we've been putting forth in this story, which is a move away from the conception of sin I inherited as a faithful independent Baptist, which was sin as, like, the bad things you did that made God angry.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a list of those things. and moving towards kind of what we find in Genesis 1, this picture of a primordial, a kind of cosmic chaos typified in like these like waters that the Spirit of God is hovering over. Like these waters make it impossible for life to dwell on earth. And so what God does is not like slap the waters and send them to bed and get out of here, but he pulls the waters into order.
Yeah.
He pulls the chaos into order. And immediately as soon as he does that, we see in the Genesis narrative, like the land is exposed and grass starts to grow.
Yeah.
And so I think as we kind of hold this conception of sin as our chaos unfettered, our chaos
unchecked,
properly our chaos mismanaged, if you will, when we try to order it, it produces death.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when it's ordered by the one who has the perspective and the power to do so, vis-a-vis God, life can immediately start to thrive. And that kind of takes a whole different shift. It now frees me from recognizing I will never be without chaos. And that, like, at the end of everything that we call sin is really a good need improperly sought.
Yeah.
And so like in that place, then now I can go, man, this thing that I keep stumbling over, what's the need I'm trying to address here? And then I can take that to God and say, like, how are you wanting to order this?
Yeah.
And that leads us to a place of life and flourishing and not so much bad, good, bad, good. But what's life-giving and what's life-taking?
And then the great hope is even when we do try to mismanage it and it goes awry, there is a God who can even take that and enfold it into his purposes.
Okay, so that's kind of the second question that was kind of left for us to handle was there was this question of like, why was it that it was the cutting of the hair that separated Samson from God and not necessarily, you know, eating honey out of a corpse, marrying a Philistine, you know, all these things he continually did. Why was it something so trivial, seemingly trivial, as cutting the hair? Which I kind of also would add on to that to kind of modernize it is to say, like, what is it that creates death? Is it like this one sin, you shouldn't do that thing.
Yeah.
You shouldn't let your chaos get out in that way. Or is there something deeper? How do you know?
I think I would answer this question by like giving a parallel example that doesn't seem like it's a parallel in the moment. It's like looking at marriage and saying, well, I have love there. I have attraction there. I have depth of relation there. Why do I need this silly ceremony? Why do I need to consummate this with this one person in this particular way to make it marriage? And I think there's something in there of the same question. Why is it this one thing that separates Samson from God and not all the other stuff? Because this one thing symbolized his entire vow. This, in order to be free of a Nazirite vow, you had to cut your hair. And so just like as in the sacrament of marriage is the one thing that takes love and attraction, desire and intimacy and bounds it up in a covenant, so too was Samson's covenant bound up in his hair. And so it's less like there's this one particular thing that like, oh, fine, you know, that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. It's more so this is actually an act of utter defiance. This is I do no longer want to be God's, just as a divorce is saying I no longer want to be married.
So you hate elopements is what I'm hearing.
I mean, listen, you know, elope with your pastor, you know, like, and he can do the ceremony for you. Well, but
I feel like I hear what you're saying in the sense, you know, again, we have this conception of sin, but then our conception of evil that based off that. So if sin are the ways in which I improperly try to order the chaos in my life, evil is the contempt shown to the ways that God tries to order it. And that's, there's kind of like a...
There's a magnitude above that. And that's where we're getting the Samson story. That's what I was kind of point I was trying to make in the sermon was there's this moment in that moment with Delilah that Samson is finally saying, I want to be free of this burden called God. And so, and because this is the primary symbol of that, it's an outward symbol of what has happened in Samson's heart.
Which kind of hits for me then that what God is, would it be fair to say that what God is doing is like he allows Samson to break his, you know, covenants, these like markers of the covenant, and he allows him the freedom to do that, and also he has to face the consequences of it. But then he also allows him the ultimate freedom to actually reject him. Like God allows Samson the freedom to not love God.
And there's something in that, I think, because in if we read the story of Samson like in this way, Samson's great desire for freedom is finally met. And it's actually when he finally gets this kind of this idea of freedom of his, is that he actually comes to a truer covenant with God, a truer relation with God. So God allows Samson to break the relationship only so that Samson could recognize his deep need. It's actually deep need of this relationship. And so actually the story ends, you could argue, with Samson with a deeper understanding of his relationship to God.
And a real desire to go be with God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And take a few people with him.
Exactly.
All right, and then the last part of that, just to kind of put the bow on this, you know, you're a pastor, and one of the questions was essentially like, okay, Samson sees along the way, like, this marriage to Delilah, she does not have his best interest in heart. Like, if I keep waking up and dudes are, like, trying to arrest me, like, why does he keep doing this? And why do I keep, I think, like, behind that head, it's like, why do I keep doing these things that I don't want to do? And should Samson have just, like, divorced Delilah? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it's even more tragic when, actually, the story, him and Delilah never actually get married. He's just in love with her, so it's even more tragic.
It's true.
She didn't even let him put a ring on it. I'll say this. I think when I think of this question, I think of this. It is a lot easier to feel loved than it is to go about the hard work of being loved. And I think many of us, our desire for whatever it is, whether it's love or intimacy, whether it's security or safety, it is easier to settle for the facsimile of it and in that facsimile find comfort than it is to do the hard work of risking losing that comfort and actually pursuing something real. And because it's real, it comes with the very real risk of loss. So I think Samson in the story, he's settling for this because he's settling for the facsimile of something. And I think he knows it. I think Samson's utterly aware. He's not stupid. There's a reason men come every night to come try to bind him up because his girl sets him up. And yet, how often is this our relationships to certain things? We're like, we know this thing kills us in the end. But man, that one moment when his head is laid on her lap is worth it all, because he rather have that fleeting moment of something than the risk of nothing. And that's the risk of love. That's the risk of putting our safety and security in a God we cannot see. It's to the point you made this past week, that the great risk is that I will put myself out there and have nothing. So I'd rather settle for the false something.
It feels like that Nike campaign a couple years ago, Choose Your Hard. I feel like that's what I'm hearing you say. Like it's hard to wake up constantly having, like, the cops at your house, you know?
Yeah.
constantly feeling like you can't trust this person you're in relationship with. And it's also hard to put your satisfaction, flourishing, happiness in the hands of a God you can't see or touch or, like, reason with.
And even so, I think on top of that, too, I think in the Samson story, there is something about Samson that keeps he's bound by this covenant, so he's always looking for ways to assert his agency. So many of us, we stay in these broken things simply out of spite. Because it's our choice. And man, this my choice sucked, but it's mine. And I'll live and die by it.
Yeah.
But God forbid I'm being invited to give my choices to someone else. So I'll live in spite in a broken thing just so I can say it's mine.
Which now, as we kind of begin starting to move forward and the bringing it forward, I love what you're saying there, because there's an irony there. Yeah, I'm hearing you speak to, I believe I'm choosing freedom and autonomy by becoming a slave to myself.
Yeah.
And a slave to these cycles. And we have where we're going now, this chapter we just launched last week, which is the rise and fall of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And that's starting with the Israelite people like saying, we want a king.
Yeah.
There's an irony there that they're like, we don't want a God who's given us everything. We don't want to be ruled by you. We want to be ruled by a flesh and blood person.
Yeah, and it's funny, even when Samuel reads them the terms and conditions, like this man will enslave your sons and take your daughters and tax you out the wazoo, they say, yeah, but we want one. Mm. And it's like, man, how deep is our desire for self-sufficiency and agency? It's the oldest sin in the book. It's the desire for agency and life outside of God. That need is so deep. We'll say we rather freely be slaves than to freely trust God.
Okay, well, here's what I'm going to ask you, because we're in this unique time in America.
Unique is one way to put it.
Where earnestly, it feels somewhat similar, where people are asking for a change.
Yeah.
They want to change, by and large. You know, one thing is true, you know, red, blue, or purple. The sociologists say no one's happy with the state of our country.
Yeah.
Right. So everyone wants a change.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the majority of our country voted for Donald Trump, who has said very blankly, like, he wants to kind of impose his
Vision of change,
his vision of change, and his alone. It doesn't really want like collaboration on that. He wants like his vision. So I wonder, as we move forward into this chapter, what themes, what corollaries, or what you offer to kind of like say to someone, hey, tune in on this, watch this as this unfolds in scripture, that may speak to, you know, even our current climate.
Yeah. I think I'm preaching this Sunday. Maybe I'll share like a little preview, but there is something about the attractiveness of tyrants. Because it's the attractiveness of a political strongman. This person sets themselves up as the one who will save and who will redeem and who will make better for me. And we will overlook all the warning signs, all the red flags, all the rhetoric, because our desire for that thing is so great. And so I think there is something where this comes down, we're talking about Saul. And that whole narrative of his anointing is a narrative of a man who looks the part but lacks the heart. And what we'll learn later in the story is that man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And I think when it comes to our engagement with our current social, political realities, to become discerning people who know how to look at the heart of things and not get enamored with what's on the outside. So, with that said, we have some resources?
Yes. I will just add, though, I think another thing that's worth watching out for is, because I think there's a way of even just hearing what you said, and some people, depending on their politics, may go, did he just call my president a tyrant? I think what's interesting is where we're going, and even these kings, the kings that seem outwardly bad end up being bad.
Yeah.
And the kings that end up being outwardly good also end up being bad.
Yeah.
Like, what's true across the board,
yeah,
is that men just don't cut it
as
leaders, as or should I say, humanity isn't good at leading itself.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the package looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have like Ahab or Saul in his life who they just do wicked things and there's wicked results on the people. Yeah. And then you also have even David, who's like a man after God's own heart, who also ends up doing wicked things. And so it feels like there's a theme around the recognition that God's trying to give the people in the beginning, which is you cannot trust in chariots.
Yeah.
And horses. You cannot trust in, you cannot put your trust in any administration.
Yeah.
Because they can't bear the weight.
Yeah.
Some are going to lead you into even worse places than before.
Yeah.
But they're all going to fail you. And so what we need then is to be a people consistently reliant upon the God who wants to lead us. And it seems that some of the things we'll find is that what really determines just, you know, on that gradient of like bad to terrible or not as bad, it seems like the gradient of leadership, the good side of that is found in those who submit themselves to God's authority.
Yeah.
And that kind of really makes all the difference as we're looking at human leaders.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, to get out of here, we do have a resource.
Yes, please.
Which is, there's an awesome podcast someone pointed us to when we first started. It's called Biblical Time Machine. And it's two hosts. They're incredible Bible scholars, history scholars, and they just bring in guests to go through different like historicity, like textual criticism, understanding of the Bible. But they have an awesome episode, episode 66, which is on Samson, called Hero or Psychopath. And I think so I think it's a really great just kind of looking at the story of Samson and all the just like the weird stuff that's there and kind of unpacking how we can like understand what's really happening in and through the life of Samson. So that's our resource.
Well, we'll be here next time. Same bat time, same bat place.
All right.
Between the lines.
Between the lines.